Welcome to the ISF podcast from the Information Security Forum, featuring timely conversations, practical insights, and resources for global cybersecurity professionals. I'm your host, Tavia Gilbert. Today's episode is a bit different from our normal interview format. Instead, we are featuring a presentation made by ISF CEO Steve Durbin on the CISO, Cyber, and the Board at the ISF's Nordic Spring Conference this May. This was a chapter meeting held for ISF members in the Nordic region. ISF holds meetings three times a year to give members in the same geographic region a confidential forum where they can network and exchange ideas. In his presentation, Steve addresses the five areas where he believes CISOs need to focus in 2022. For our listeners who are CISOs or in a position where you regularly communicate with your board, you'll find some practical ideas to help you do that. For those of you who are closer to the beginning of your career in cyber, Steve offers some insights about the nature of the relationship between cybersecurity and the overall business that you'll find helpful as you look to develop skills relevant to the needs of your business. There are a couple of references to visuals Steve used during his presentation, and you can find links to those images in the show notes.
Hello, everybody. Thanks very much for joining me today. What I'm going to cover is three key areas. I want to talk a little bit about the way that cyber has been evolving over the past 12 months and look forward a little bit too, so that we've got a perspective over the coming 12 and 18 months. I really want to talk about what that means for the Chief Information Security Officer and particularly the CISO's security teams. And then finally, I want to position that within the context of business and what that means from a board standpoint. So let's start by taking a look at really what's been going on in the cyberspace. And really, I use the pandemic as the starting point for that. Why? Well, the pandemic really changed a significant number of things. We'd already started down a road of digital transformation, but what happened during the pandemic was everything was accelerated. So we moved significantly, we needed to, into a much more digital environment. Now, from a security standpoint, that presented us with some real challenges. Hybrid working is all well and good from the business perspective, but from a security standpoint, what we had to do was cope with the fact that we suddenly had people in environments that we didn't really understand. We had no idea what Wi-Fi connections were like. We had no idea perhaps what equipment was being used, who might be using it at any one point in time, particularly in homes. So this notion of security around unprotected devices, unprotected connections, and the impact that has on insider threat alone, really, I think, caused a lot of security departments to have to sit back and think about how they were going to reformat the way in which they worked with people accessing their systems from what was actually all around the world. At the same time, a lot of organizations continued with their rollouts. So it was an opportunity to really accelerate the move towards the cloud. From an ISF standpoint, we've talked a lot, of course, about things like edge computing. We've talked a lot about supply chains, how to work with them, and how to really secure data as it transits through what is a fairly complex web now of the internet in all different parts of the world. And then we had to deal again with things like 5G, which was being rolled out. If I talk to a lot of multinational organizations, the very large ones that are within the ISF membership, some of them already moved quite quickly into that 5G space. And of course, as always, for every piece of technology that is used by the good guys, the criminals themselves, the threat actors, also have access to that. So the whole environment for cyber changed very, very quickly in a very, very short space of time. Now, the benefit of all of this, of course, is that from a security perspective, we really did have to become very much more agile. We had to work very much more effectively and efficiently with not just our own business, but also, as I mentioned before, third parties and suppliers. So for me, the pandemic really contributed to moving forward the way in which security was viewed, not just within the business, but just generally as well. And that's a theme, I think, that we'll see continuing over the next 12 to 18 months. But of course, we've also seen significant amount of cyber attacks. And that in itself has had, I think, what I would describe as being very positive impact, and people may think that's a little strange, but it's had a very positive impact on the way in which security is being viewed. Now, you can see on the screen there a number of different attacks. Some of them I would call quite traditional. So the ones we're used to seeing where, you know, a significant amount of data has been lost. But what does that mean for me? Well, if my data hasn't been caught up in it, probably not a lot. But the two things that I would draw your attention to are Colonial Pipeline, and JBS. So if we look at Colonial first, that was in May 2021. For me, that was the first time, probably, that a significant cyber attack was really brought home to the average individual. If you think back to that, particularly if you're in the United States, you will have known that it was difficult, for instance, to get fuel for your car. So that's an example of a cyber attack that has moved out of the realms of pure cyber and has really moved into the physical. So it's impacting individuals. JBS, not dissimilar. JBS is one of the largest meat processing firms in the world, and it was forced to shut down facilities in the United States and Canada, Australia as well, because of a ransomware attack. So again, that resulted in a shortage of meat. So bringing things home to people really, I think, makes them understand better the impact that a cyber attack can have. What that has done, I think, is accentuate what some of us have been saying for a very long while, which is that cybersecurity isn't just an IT issue. It is very much a strategic imperative for boards, for officials, regulators. And the reality is that both the public and the private sector simply aren't ready for that growing cyber storm. Why? Because we don't have the resources. We're short on people. How do we focus into the areas that we need to be focusing in order to better, I suppose, align security with the direction that business is heading? And I'll come back to that in a moment. So cyber attacks are continuing, will continue. And specifically, what am I bothered about? Well, malware, that's there. We know it's there. It's going to target user data. We're seeing it being used in fraud, phishing, of course. Ransomware, that remains a top concern for most organizations today. At the ISF, we're running a significant number of cybersecurity exercises using ransomware as a theme so that organizations are better equipped to deal with the day when that actually hits them. But the piece that bothers me probably the most, and I've talked about this a lot in the past, so those of you that have heard me talk about this before will know that this is a common theme of mine. The piece that worries me the most is that manipulation of data. Not so much the theft, but the manipulation. We're moving very much more into an environment where we are making business decisions based on data. We are moving into an environment where we're using artificial intelligence, where data integrity is absolutely critical. And so changing little elements of data to result perhaps in the wrong decision being made, or a decision that perhaps a malicious actor would like us to make being made, that's what really concerns me the most. And in addition, you know, over the next 12 to 18 months, we're going to continue to see things like network intrusions. We're going to continue to see social engineering. None of that is going away. But as I say, the two elements I think that we're going to be focusing on, certainly ransomware, and then this more insidious sort of manipulation of data that will impact the way in which we actually go about performing our jobs. All of that, the CISO has to deal with. All of that, the security team has to deal with, in addition to the normal day job. And the piece that has changed for me, probably most, is this raising of awareness, understanding of the impact that cyber incidents have on the business. Now, this graph, two graphs that you can see here, this is not ISF, this is taken from the Allianz Risk Barometer. It's something that they do every year. And you can see here what business individuals, business leaders are most concerned about. Yes, it is cyber incidents. That's higher than natural catastrophes, higher than pandemic. But ransomware and that increase in ransomware coupled with data breaches are the sorts of things that are really occupying the minds of senior leaders in businesses today. And why is that? Well, very simply, it's because it can really knock you off your course. So you may well have the finest business strategy in the world, but it doesn't take very much to delay that, to knock that back, and the impact that that has both on shareholder value, both on employees, and also the direction that the company is taking shouldn't be underestimated. And that's really why cyber, I think, has risen to the level of interest that it has today. And all of that means that if cyber is moving that way, Security departments and CISOs need to move that way as well. No longer is it sufficient to be talking about cyber from an IT or technical perspective. We have to be linking it very much more with the business. So going forward, what does that mean? Well, it means that we're going to have to create business-based security strategies. That combination of the post-pandemic and emerging security threats really requires us, I think, to take a fresh look at our security strategy, to really reassess it in the light of how the business, the organization, is trying to evolve over the coming 12, 18, 24 months. So that in the end, the security strategy is actually supportive of that overall organizational strategy. And no longer are they viewed separately. And that's good news. It's good news because it should put to rest once and for all this issue that security has had about how do we justify our existence, if you like, how do we justify resources, how do we demonstrate a return on investment, because we're aligning now very much more with the direction that the business is headed in. So if we're looking to expand into a new geography, security should be involved in that. No longer is it viewed as a security cost. It's viewed as being intrinsic and implicit in the way in which we will go forward and expand our business. That makes life a lot easier from a resourcing perspective. The other change that we've seen is that boards, in the main, have now realized that security is a key issue. So they are asking very much more to understand how security is being played out in relation to that overall business strategy and direction the business is headed in. So what does a board actually need to know? Well, the board really is looking for assurance. It's looking for assurance that the organization is prepared for the next crisis, whatever that might look like. It could be COVID, it could be a cyber attack, it could be anything. But there's a degree of expectation that people will have worked through some of those issues. So come the next unexpected crisis, the organization is at least prepared and able to respond appropriately. The second thing that they're assuming and looking for assurance on is what we've called here situational awareness, an understanding of our own internal weak spots, what we do well, what we don't do quite so well, where our data is, how it's being shared, how many third parties are we working with, what's the risk profile across the overall organization. So that general understanding of the organizational landscape, which is much easier to say than to actually do, because we don't have nice, neatly packaged up organizations anymore. They're spread across multiple geographies. They're spread across multiple different vendors and providers. The third thing they're looking for, and I hear this a lot in the work that I do with boards all around the world, is there is a lack of understanding, a little bit of puzzlement, if you like, in the boardroom as to why it is so difficult to implement basic cyber protection measures. There's an assumption that that's what's going on, but the board increasingly needs assurance that that is taking place. And we know that a large number of malware attacks and cyber attacks do stem from the fact that some of the basics haven't been done. So they will ask you questions, if you're a CISO, around whether or not you have carried out some of those basic cyber protection measures. Have you updated, for instance, software? Where do we stand in terms of things like virus checking? So really down in the weeds, and probably for some people listening to this, they'll be looking at it and saying, well, actually, I don't know whether I'd want to ask that question. I don't know whether I'd understand the answer to it. But it will be couched in a slightly different way under this cyber protection measure. And what they're not expecting you to do is to come back and demonstrate it with all sorts of KPIs and KRIs and what have you. They may ask you for a benchmark. So they may ask, how are we performing against other organizations in our sector, in our geography, in our size? So be prepared really to provide that level of assurance. The fourth thing that they're really after is assurance that information risk management methods are being applied. What does that actually mean? Well, this goes back to the dependence, increased dependence that we're seeing on data, on information. How are we handling it? Who's handling it? Where are we handling it? Do we know where it is? Do we know that it's protected to the level that we want it to be protected at each stage of the life cycle? and what degree of risk are we comfortable with? The board is responsible for risk, sets the risk appetite. And so it does want assurance that we're using the right information risk methods. Now, that might be, again, if you're an ISF member, something like IRAM, qualitative risk assessment methodology. It might be QIRA, a quantitative information risk assessment methodology. For me, it doesn't actually matter which one you use. The point is that you're using a risk management approach that gives you the information to be able to convey to the business that says, yes, we understand our risks, we understand how we're dealing with them, we understand how that fits in with the risk appetite that the board has set, and we can report on that. And then the final thing that the board is looking for is good practice. Good practice, particularly as it applies to information security governance and information risk management governance. The board's role has always been around governance. This is an area that they really understand. And so they do want to, I suppose, be comfortable that the latest practices are being applied. So when you talk to a board, and some people will get maybe 40 minutes in a board meeting every, 6 months? Some people will get less than that. But when you talk to a board member, those are the sorts of key points that are probably going to be top of mind. And what's the benefit? Well, by increasing engagement, the board's role in the management of risk is significantly enhanced. What you begin to find is a higher degree of engagement, higher degree of understanding. They begin to understand better why security plays the role that it does in protecting information across the organization. By doing that, they feel better informed about decisions that you would like them to make regarding information risk. And so with all of this change that is going on, with all of the speed at which technology is moving and the way that businesses have to respond to that, with all of the workload that security departments are having to deal with, this is probably one of the, I would say, easier areas to focus on. Because if we can get our boards and our senior leaders on side from the business standpoint, we're better equipped to be able to get the resourcing and the support that's required to enable a stronger security strategy and stronger security implementation across the business. And what does a breach feel like? Because that's a question that I'm asked as well. Well, it feels probably like something you've never been through before. It means that suddenly you don't have a point of reference. And so all that I've just been talking about is in preparation for the day when your systems are no longer available, when you don't have access to data. Some interesting anecdotes here. The CEO who believed that if there was a ransomware attack, all that the security department had to do was go out and buy more laptops. That's a pointer to the fact that security hasn't done a good enough job about explaining some of the impact of attack. The best way of explaining it is, as some people do, is it takes you right the way back to the days when you didn't have computers, when you didn't have access to data. And if you start with that point, then you can begin to build up this highly resilient organization that is so important for the future. But you have to rehearse these things. You have to actually carry out security exercises. You have to involve and engage with business leaders in these exercises so that they can experience some of this, so that come the day when there is an attack, and there will be, they know how to respond. So let's take a look back at the areas that we need to be focusing on in 2022. And there are probably five. The first one I've just been talking about, which is resilience. For me, that's probably the number one business priority. It is about how we identify and prioritize our critical assets. That's not a do it once and forget about it. That is a constant process because those assets will change in value. They will continually move and morph. And they will have a different level of importance to the organization depending on what the organization is actually doing in its business cycle. But resilience can really improve your ability to respond. And that's the first thing we need to focus on. The second is about risk management, governance, and compliance. And a sound governance framework is absolutely key in this. We need to be able to identify the different changes that are taking place that impact our risk management profile, our risk appetite. We need to make sure that we've got the right governance structures that allow for us to be adaptable, agile in those environments. And we need to be compliant with the way in which regulations as well are changing. So this is very much about trying to combine an assessment of our internal activities with the requirements of the way in which the world might be changing, regulations might be changing, and bringing those two together. The third area is in technology. We have to keep technology risk within what I've called here acceptable limits. Now, if you think about the way that a lot of large organizations will be moving, we will be adapting to the use of 5G, we will be taking on board artificial intelligence, we will be rolling out cloud environments, we will be moving towards edge computing, and a whole range of different things there. The role of security is not to prevent any of that happening. It's to design security in at the beginning so that the technology-related risks are kept under control and are understood. The fourth area is supply chain. I talk a lot about supply chain at the ISF. We have a significant number of tools that are available to our members to manage supply chain risk. But it's an all-pervasive risk. It exists everywhere. We're not going to stop working the way that we work. We work with third parties all the time in everything that we do. And we have to keep reviewing these potential threats, potential risks to our data at each and every stage that it's handed off to a third party. And there's an onus, I think, on large organizations to work very much more collaboratively with smaller ones, because the small organizations don't have the resources that are required to bring supply chain security to the level, perhaps, that we would expect from a large enterprise standpoint. So a lot more collaboration needed in that space. And then finally, I come to workforce. The world has changed significantly. The world of work has changed. We work in hybrid environments. We probably won't go back to anything that resembles what we had in a pre-pandemic era. Policies and procedures need to reflect that. We also need to pay special attention to mental health, to cyber fatigue, spending hours staring at a screen all day, remote from work colleagues, is not an ideal way to get through the day. And so we have to change some of the ways in which we work as leaders, as managers. We also have to make sure that we are providing the right level of support, whether that be through training or other things, to people that we're asking, particularly in the security space, to work on some of the things I've just been talking about. Because increasingly, it's our people that are going to be the differentiator should an attack take place. You're not going to be able to fall back on artificial intelligence or machines and tools to get your business back up and running. It's your people that will do that, and so you have to prepare them for it. You have to work with them to make sure that they are best equipped for it. And if we can do all of that, then some of the other things I've just been talking about in terms of resilience and risk management and supply chain, for instance, to a certain extent will begin to take care of themselves. So that is all that I've got for you in this particular session. I hope you found that useful. I've talked about the way in which cyber has evolved, talked about some of the changes that's brought about from a security standpoint and some of the things we need to be looking out for, particularly the alignment of security very much more with the business, and then finished up there with just some key focus areas for you for the coming year. If you've got any questions or if you'd like to reach out and talk about any of the issues that I've covered or perhaps those that I didn't cover that you felt that I should, then please do. There's also a range of ISF podcasts and webcasts that you can dip into, whether or not you're a member. Doesn't really matter. They're freely available on the ISF public website. So thank you very much for your time, and I look forward to seeing you again on another ISF webcast in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
If anyone listening would like to reach out to Steve with questions or comments, you'll find his contact information in the show notes, along with links to past podcast episodes relevant to the subject of the CISO and communicating with the board. We'll be back next week with a discussion between Steve and Göran Wallis, CTO at NetNordic Sweden, about AI and machine learning. Here's a preview.
So we're creating huge amounts of data, massive volumes. We're increasing the velocity, the speed at which that data is being transitioned and shared. We're using cloud systems. We're using cyber physical systems, if you think about smart cities, for instance. Now, all of that digital transformation journey that very many people talk about, makes life very much more difficult, as I say, from a security standpoint. AI and machine learning and the tools associated with both of those really are helpful to the security professional because we simply don't have, as individuals, as humans, the ability to monitor the sheer volumes of data that we're talking about. And that's one of the reasons why, if we look at the overall market, you know, the market for AI technology and tools between now and 2025 is probably going to increase by about $19 billion. So that gives you some insight into the scope that we're talking about and the overall number of different, I think, applications, tools, and things that we'll see coming along.
We'll be back for the full conversation in a week. In the meantime, as always, we ask that you take 10 seconds to pull up this podcast on whatever device you're listening and give us a 5-star rating. And if you have a minute more, write a short review. That helps other listeners who might enjoy our content find us. And if there's a topic or a question that you'd like us to cover in a future episode, let us know at securityforum.org, which is also where you can find that catalog of past video and podcast episodes, as well as ISF's research, practical tools, and guidance related to discussions like today's. The ISF podcast is produced by TalkBox and Tavia Gilbert, with music by Alexander Filipiak. Senior producer Katie Flood. Mix and master by Brian Barney. Thanks for listening.